please give Brett a very warm welcome.
My name's Brett, and I'm a great recovering alcoholic. This is actually the first time that I've told my story, and I'm honored and privileged to be here to be able to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. I was born on September 8th, 1983, right here in Atlanta, Georgia, Northside Hospital. Growing up, I think I had a pretty normal childhood. My parents, you know, they didn't abuse me, they didn't do any drugs, they drank a little bit, they might have smoked a little bit of pot, but other than that, you know, everything was so-called normal. My parents, they got divorced when I was 8 years old, and I just remember that just triggered something in my behavior. I don't know what, but I remember I started wanting to seek attention really, really bad. I started acting out in school, so that was about the time I was in second grade. Just little stuff, stealing stuff, getting into fights and arguments in school. And it just progressively got worse, the same way that my alcoholism and my drug addiction did over the years. I started getting suspended from school when I was in third and fourth grade. I hadn't touched drugs yet, but the behavior to do drugs and alcohol had already set in, because I'm an alcoholic, because I'm an addict. I believe that I was born with the disease of alcoholism. I had my first drink in fifth grade when I was 11 years old. My dad had remarried, and I had an older stepsister, and I tried drinking with her and, of course, smoking pot for the first time with her and her friends. And I remember I was 11 years old, and, you know, these people were 16 and some of them 20 years old. And I immediately loved the way that I felt, the way that I escaped, the way that I didn't have to deal with reality. And I just remember asking her when I was 11 years old, my stepsister, asking her about other drugs and hardcore drugs and other forms of liquor and things of that nature. So automatically, at a young age, I wanted to experience drugs and alcohol in a pretty extreme form. Fifth grade, I got suspended from school multiple times. I remember I would steal my parents' liquor. I would go into, well, my mom, I remember she always kept a bottle in her freezer, and I'd always steal it and make screwdrivers, and then I'd fill it back up with water, because that's what a good addict and alcoholic does. They don't know. I didn't think she would know. So that continued for a while, and I just remember just getting suspended from school and for fighting, and this was still going on in elementary school. My sixth grade year was a pretty bad year. I started drinking on a regular basis. I remember my parents would take me to see psychiatrists and psychologists, and, you know, have them try to diagnose me what's wrong. And they would always like try to put me on medicine for ADD, ADHD, bipolar, depression, all that stuff, and nothing seemed to work. In sixth grade, I got suspended from school for drinking beer at school. I'll never forget that. I got suspended out of school for 10 days, and here I am 12 years old getting suspended from school. Meanwhile, that year, when I was 12, I went into my first institution. Some of y'all may have heard the institution Charter Peachford. I think it's now just called Peachford. I was in there for 42 days of inpatient, but it was not for alcohol and drugs at that time. It was for behavioral problems. But I remember that was the first time I ever picked up a big book, because I had a bunch of time on my hands and there were other people there for alcohol and drug problems. And that was kind of my first introduction to this wonderful program we have. I got out of Charter Peachford when I was 12 years old, went back to the same middle school, and continued to drink and get high. I got arrested for the first time when I was 12 years old. I had broken into a school when I was under the influence of alcohol and just completely trashed the school. I didn't get caught that night, but actually a few weeks later I had sent a letter to a friend in another state. My mom found the letter and turned me into the police. She had a habit of calling the police on me. that same year, I thought it would be a good idea in sixth grade to steal my teacher's credit card. And, of course, I wouldn't get caught for that. So I was sitting in Fulton County YDC across from the old Braves Stadium on a burglary and transactional credit card theft charge, 12 years old, 1996. And, you know, I just remember looking around and, like, I can't believe I'm sitting here in jail 12 years old. Ended up going to a few other rehabs that year. While I was at the detention center, the judge ordered a psychiatric evaluation, so I ended up getting sent to my first state-run mental hospital, if you want to call it, GMHI. And I actually ended up running away from there, and the police had to end up bringing me back. And I went back to court, and the judge ended up sending me to boot camp. So I ended up going to boot camp for 30 days when I was 12 years old, and ended up doing about 3 months in YDC while I was in 96. Ended up getting out, and I remember I immediately started drinking and using again. And I ended up going to Ridgeview, and I ended up doing the outpatient because my family couldn't afford the inpatient because I maxed the insurance out for Charter Petroid. I'm still hearing about that 10 years later. That was my main introduction into this program. When I was an outpatient at Ridgeview at 12 years old, they required us to go to AA meetings. I went to my first AA meeting at 8111 when I was 12 years old, and I remember you could be able to smoke in there, and there was a bunch of old people in there, and I'm just like, this is cool, you know. I'm 12 years old, I can smoke a cigarette in the meeting and, you know, talk shit, whatever. And I remember my dad would sit in the car when I was at the meeting, and he saw me smoking one time, and when I was at 8111, and I just remember him pulling someone aside and telling them not to give me cigarettes and stuff. But of course, I didn't stay sober. I just got introduced to other ways of drinking and partying. So that was when I was 12. When I was 13, my mom decided that I needed to go to another school system because I was in Fulton County Schools. So she transferred me to Gwinnett County Schools. Well, that didn't change anything. I continued to drink and continued to use drugs. Things continually got out of control. So when I was 13 years old, I ended up getting committed to the state. My parents, they threw their hands up. They couldn't deal with my behaviors and actions anymore. So I became a ward of the state, and DFACS had custody of me. I remember I was in a DFACS shelter off of Stewart Avenue. And I just remember, like, you know, I had these loving parents, and here I am around these kids that have been abused and neglected, and, you know, why the hell am I sitting here? I didn't realize that my actions had landed me in there. I was just mad at my parents. Well, around that time, I was getting real depressed, and I told them I was depressed. So I made my way to another psychiatric facility called GMHI. No, Georgia Regional. I'd already went to GMHI, so this time I was at Georgia Regional. And from there, I ended up getting into a residential treatment program for about 18 months altogether. I was at one facility for 10 months and ended up just really, really acting out in there. I was fighting staff. I was fighting people that were in there. I mean, that's what I used to love to do, just fight. You know, I was a very angry kid. I had a lot of anger problems, real violent. And I was in there for 10 months, and then they transferred me to another program off of Briarcliff Road. And I was in there for 6 months, and I just completely changed. And I was going to AA meetings when I was in there. I was doing a little bit of step work that I could. I was going to counseling. And I got out when I was 15, and I went to live with my dad. And that seemed to work out pretty good because I had, at this point, 18 months sober. I ended up getting into another type of outpatient rehab, this Atlanta Insight group. And then I started to meet some other people that had experienced, you know, harder drugs than what I had been doing before. when I was 16 is when I really started getting real heavy into drugs. I ended up relapsing and lost my 18 months that I had, but I wasn't working the program. And I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't doing what it took to stay sober. And I'm one of those chronic relapsers. I would continually come into AA and pick up white tips. And I was the type of person that could never, 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 ever get sober. So I thought. So that continued on, and I really started experiencing hardcore drugs, heroin, meth, things of that nature when I was 16. When I was 17, I ended up getting arrested as an adult for the first time for underage consumption of alcohol. So I was on probation, and of course still using, because probation never stopped me from using or drinking. And I ended up overdosing, and I ended up going to the hospital, and of course violating my probation when I was 17. And so I was sitting in jail, and I remember the judge gave me an opportunity to go to yet another rehab program. I went to this program called the Hickey House up in Helen, Georgia, and I was mandated there. And I was there about 2 weeks. Remember, I got a job at a restaurant, but two nights before I got the job at that restaurant, I had an argument with one of the guys in the halfway house. And I didn't know, but my probation officer and the marshal were waiting there for me the first day of my job. So I ended up going back to jail. Sat in jail a few more months, and then I ended up getting another opportunity to go to another program called Bridges of Hope. This was a big farm. They have a bunch of them in Georgia, and I got mandated to there. And I was there about 4 or 5 months, and I had this year-long sentence. So in my mind, I'm just riding this sentence out just so I can get back to Atlanta and go back to what I was doing, what I knew best, getting high and drinking. And I remember I had like a month left of my sentence, and I wanted to start getting high again. So, of course, I told them I was depressed and suicidal. They sent me to another state-run facility. And, of course, I lied to the doctors and told them I was prescribed a certain prescriptions, and I wasn't. I got out of there, and on the bus back, I passed out on a bunch of benzodiazepines, and, of course, ended up getting high while I was in rehab. And once again, that marshal and probation officer were there to meet me at the rehab to take me back to jail. finished out my sentence in Roswell Jail and ended up getting out of jail and going back to what I was doing. Drinking, getting high. the whole time, I mean, I always dabbled in drugs. I always drank. I mean, that is what I did every day. When I got out of jail that time, I was pretty much homeless. You know, my parents didn't want me around. I didn't really have anywhere to go, so I ended up going to some halfway houses, and I bounced in and out of those. I've probably been to every halfway house off of Buford Highway, known to man. And that's how I live my life. I mean, I live my life in and out of these detention centers, jails, and institutions, because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get high, I wanted to drink, and sell dope. That's what I did. One of the times I was in the Peachford House, I thought it'd be a good idea to do a third-party drug transaction while I was in the halfway house. I mean, I stayed getting high in these halfway houses on Buford Highway, and I remember walking in Abba a bunch of times. But I was in Roswell. I was 18 years old, and I did a third-party drug transaction, and the guy that I had sold these drugs to the other person showed up at the house demanding his money back. And I told the guy there's no refund and exchange policy in the dope game. And the people in the house told us to take it outside. And I was drunk, and I was on a bunch of pills, and I was in a blackout. And I ended up pulling a knife out of my pocket and stabbing the guy. And he ended up having a punctured lung, and I went on the run. For 3 days. While I was on the run, the fugitive task force raided the halfway house looking for me. And the whole time, you know, I thought I'd committed a murder charge. I mean, I was told that he was dead. I mean, I had no idea. So there's no in hell I'm turning myself in. I'm 18 years old. I just stab this guy, my life's over. Luckily, the kid got off life support and survived, and I ended up turning myself in 3 days later, and I was in another state. And I turned myself in, and I went in front of the judge in the city of Roswell, and he set my bond at $100,000 cash only. Okay, well, I'm definitely not getting out of jail. And ended up bounding over to Fulton County Jail, and that was a whole other experience. I tended to frequent Rice Street a lot, and this was the first time I was in Rice Street. So my bond dropped from $100,000 cash only to $30,000 through a bondsman. And my parents are like, "We're not getting you out. You can sit in there and get yourself out." And but I didn't have a drug problem. I didn't have a drinking problem. This is what I'm telling myself. And of course, I prayed the whole time I was in there and said, "You know, God, if you get me out of this, I'll never drink again. I'll never get high again." After 3 months of sitting in Rice Street, somehow my public defender ended up getting me an OR bond, which means I signed myself out of jail, stating that I'll come back. That was when I was 18. Now, normally someone, you know, if they got that lucky and blessed, would do something to change your life. Not me. I don't remember where I went that night, but I know that I ended up getting high and drunk right when I got out. That was when I was about 18. Yeah, that was when I was 18 years old. Continue to drink, continue to get high. Try to stay sober, you know, went to some AA meetings and it just didn't work. I didn't want it to work. I was too busy in my own selfishness to care about my life or anyone else's. I ended up catching a forgery charge. I forged a prescription for, I think, some prescription pill while I'm out on bond on this aggravated assault charge. So I ended up in Gwinnett County Jail in 2002 on a forgery charge. Ended up meeting a really nice guy that I'd seen in Napa by the name of Bill Roop. I don't know if he's still sober or not, but I remember the guy telling me he had 50 years sober when I met him, and I'm like, damn. And he's like, well, and he was leading the meeting in Gwinnett County Jail, and I was like, man, I need to get sober. This guy can do it. I can do it. And I remember telling Bill that, you know, I'd see it when I got out. And he said, you know how many damn people have told me that? Well, sure enough, I got out, and I don't know, a few months later, I ended up seeing him here at Napa. But I continued to get high and continued to drink. I remember I floated in our halfway houses because I couldn't make it on my own. In and out of different apartments, friends' houses, and you know, the whole time, I mean, I was real big into selling drugs. You know, that's what I did to survive and support my habit. And you know, I was an extremist. You know, I don't like selling weed. I like to sell heroin and hardcore drugs because those type of people are my type of people. You know, never knew if I was going to get robbed or stabbed or shot or anything. And I remember on one occasion, I was making a transaction or trying to, and two guys ended up pulling a pistol on me, and I was pretty crazy back then, and I looked him straight in the face and told the guy that you don't have the balls to pull the trigger, and he didn't, but he sure as hell pistol whipped me and robbed me and stole my stuff. And, you know, things like that happen on a regular basis. I mean, if it wasn't them doing it to me, I was doing it to someone else, and that's just, you know, how I was on the street. I mean, I was not a nice person at all. Ruthless. And I remember I ended up getting back into another halfway house, I think Tangu over on Roswell Road at that time. And I was probably 20 or 21. And I was sober on my 21st birthday. And you know, that was a blessing because I'm like, man, I can stay sober on my 21st birthday. You know, I can do anything. Actually, fast forward a little too far, but when I was 18, I ended up working at getting into the nightclub business, and I ended up promoting it at one of the most popular hip hop nightclubs in Atlanta. And in my mind, it was a great experience back then because I can promote a nightclub and I can sell dope out the back door and party with all the rappers and celebrities and things of that nature and have a great time. And I just remember the owners of the club just pulling me aside one day and telling me, you know, we know what you're doing. You can't sell dope out of our club anymore. And, of course, I lied to them and told them I'm not selling dope out of y'all's club. And, you know, that's how I lived my life, just lying and, you know, not being honest. So fast forward back to when I was sober on my 21st birthday, I thought that, you know, maybe there is hope. And ended up getting my old job back at the nightclub, and of course ended up drinking and getting high again and relapsing. This type of pattern continued and continued and continued my whole life, because I couldn't accept that I was an alcoholic. I couldn't accept that I had a problem. I mean, I continually did not want to put the drink down, did not want to put the drugs down. It's all I knew. It's what I was programmed to do, is to drink and to get high. In 2005, I tried to get sober again. I was completely homeless at this time. I mean, I didn't have anything to my name. I ended up meeting a guy that's in here now and ended up going to live with him. And this guy ended up getting me a job at a strip club. You know, I was promoting Mardi Gras over at Powers Ferry, and what a great life, you know, living in his nice house up in Suwannee, and once again, selling dope out of the strip club. Got fired because the owner told me, you're not selling dope out of this club. And so that was 2005, and you know, by this time I thought I hit another rock bottom, but I'm a fighter. That's what I did. I kept going on, no matter what, homelessness, broke, poor, whatever. And I ended up moving up to Athens with one of my first sponsors that I used to come to Nava with all the time when I was 18. And I ended up going to this halfway house called the Palm House up in Athens. And I remember I met another friend of mine, Tommy, who's actually here tonight as well. And I asked him to sponsor me, and he said that he would. But the whole time, I was drinking and taking pills and ended up getting kicked out of the halfway house that I was at. And then I went to go live with my first sponsor, who the reason I had moved up there with, and you know, he couldn't take any more as well. You know, he dropped me off at a bus stop and gave me some money and said, I can't deal with this. So everyone that had ever been in my life that tried to help me, I pushed away. My parents, my friends, my family, I mean, everyone. And that's just, you know, the type of lifestyle that I lived. I didn't know in 2005 that I had a warrant for trafficking ecstasy, and I ended up getting arrested for that from late 2004, early 2005, and that was in Bartow County, and I had no way to get out of jail. My parents wouldn't bring money to a lawyer. I was just stuck. And that was in 2005, and I ended up getting sentenced to 215 serve threes to run concurrent. And in 2006, while I was waiting to go to prison, I ended up getting high in the county jail. And I mean, when there's a will, there's a way. Everywhere that I was at, I found a way to get high. Whatever county jail I was in, whatever rehab I was in, I mean, I was determined. And that's, you know, we're making alcohol in the jail. I mean, that's just, you know, gotta get drunk. And I remember that was sometime in 2006, while I was waiting to go to prison, was the last time that I got high. And I ended up going to prison. I remember when I got there, I was just looking around, and I'm 22 years old, and I don't know if, you know, if I had an awakening or what, but I'm looking around and I'm seeing these guys that are 50 and 60 years old sitting in prison, been there for 10, 15, 20 years, and I told myself, I can't do this anymore. You know, there's absolutely no way that I can keep doing this. If I keep doing this, I'm going to die, because I'd already overdosed many times before. This is all I have to look forward to. I mean, if this isn't rock bottom, I don't know what is. And, you know, the whole time I was in there, you know, I didn't get any letters from my parents, my sister at all. My dad always came to visit me. I did have friends that wrote me, but, I mean, it was miserable. I got out of prison in 2007, and the first thing I did, I went to an AA meeting. And, you know, I just knew right then and there that maybe I do have a shot at this. And now, remember, the last time I got high was in the county jail. So my sponsor at the time, Tommy, and I kind of put our heads together to realize that my sobriety day is May 1st, 2006, because I don't know the actual date I last got drunk. And so I went to that meeting the first night I got out of prison, and I just, you know, I ended up paroling out to my dad's house, and he had a one-bedroom apartment, and, you know, I was sleeping on a sleeper sofa, and ended up getting a job at Boston Market making $7 an hour. And, you know, I was grateful to have a job, but at the same time, I just, you know, the old me was like, well, you know, I can always go back to selling drugs and this, that, and the other. Something told me that I just needed to stay sober, you know, just one more day. And I ended up, of course, going back to 8111, since I've been going there over half my life. And I ended up running back into Tommy, who is in here right now, but he was actually my sponsor in Athens. And I linked back up with him, and, you know, it was a godsend. You know, God had put him in my life for a reason. And I asked him to sponsor me again, and he did. And I gave him hell. I really did. I was completely, like, you know, I did everything the opposite he told me to do. But I'll tell you what, he stuck with me, and we started working some steps. We got into the middle of the book, we got into the steps, and we meet every single week and do the first step, do the second, do the third. And you know, He told me about this men's workshop called The Rock, and I told him, there's no damn way. I just spent 2 years in prison with a bunch of men. I'm not going to hang out with a bunch of men at a place called The Damn Rock. You know, it's not going to happen. You know? Of course, I went, and I had a really piss poor attitude, and I told him I was never going again. And the next year I went again, and you know, Tommy was the first person that I ever did a thorough four-step with. I mean, I've been in and out of the program since 96 and had hundreds of sponsors, and Tommy was the only one that I actually worked all the steps with and did it thoroughly with. And this whole time, I mean, things are continually getting better. I mean, I was still living at my dad's. And then Tommy ended up introducing me to another friend of ours. I ended up moving out of my dad's and into, you know, a friend of our house who had a room for rent. And things just continually got better. And I just remember when I picked up, I think it was probably my 2 year chip, just looking back at how grateful I was, because for so many years, I was institutionalized. I mean, I literally grew up in YDCs and jails and institutions, and for someone to go from that to not go to prison, not go back to prison, because the odds were against me. Most people that have been to prison continually go to prison. They don't make it that far. They die. They overdose. They end up catching a murder charge. Something crazy hit someone driving drunk, and all that should have been me. I mean, I should be sitting in the federal penitentiary right now. And, you know, I thank God every day, you know, that I'm not, because for me to be sober today and well, I mean, it's sometimes it's still hard for me to believe, like, where I was, where I came from, and where I'm at today. It's just, it doesn't just happen. But by working the steps in this program and taking suggestions from people in this program, I mean, it just goes to show that it works. And, you know, people always told me to keep coming back, and And I did. And I remember one time I was at 8111, and my current sponsor now, my grandma had died, and I had been on a binge, and I'd been up for like a week straight. And I remember at 8111 they had these sand bucket ashtrays up there, and I threw the whole darn sand bucket at someone. And my Arnie at the, back then, he called the police on me. And the police arrested me at 8111, and I caught a criminal trespass charge at 8111. And had to bond out of jail. But y'all kept telling me to keep coming back. So I went back. I mean, I really did. I mean, they didn't, thank God, have a restraining order on me or anything. But, I mean, that's, you know, no matter what, I mean, if anyone's going through anything, I mean, there's, you know, this can be done. It was real painful at first, because for so many years I was used to numbing myself. I drank to escape life, to escape reality, so I wouldn't have to deal with all the BS, that I didn't have to deal with myself, with my character defects, with anything. That is why I drink. That is why I use chemicals. And learning to live without chemicals, it's not easy. It was not easy for me, because I used for so long, and I did so many drugs and so much alcohol, and overdosed so many times. It's like my sponsor one time told me, he's like, you know, you walk 20 miles into the woods, you got to walk 20 miles back out of the woods. And today, I mean, I'm not perfect by any means. I still have a really, really bad anger problem. Ended up getting fired from one of my jobs in recovery because of my anger problem. And it actually ended up being a blessing, but things are not perfect in my life. By any means, but I try to do the next right thing. If something's bothering me, I mean, I have a network of people that I can call, because I am on the road all the time, and it's hard being on the road all the time and being away from my friends and my family and my girlfriend and not being able to go to a meeting all the time. But that's why I have a network of people, and there are meetings all over the country, all over the world. If anyone, you know, is in another country, they can always go to a meeting. I trip out a lot about how the Big Book was written in the 30s. I don't know the exact year when it was written, but we still use that Big Book today. We still use those steps today, and it's still working for millions and millions and millions of people. Today, this program has completely changed my life. There are friends that I have in here that I got high with and that I drank with, and that are here tonight, and those guys are sober now because of this program. And you know, it's a blessing. I'll be in a meeting, and I'll actually see people that I used to run with come in into the meetings. And, you know, I'll just be real grateful that they've found it into these rooms, too, because not everyone makes it into these rooms. I mean, I've lost a lot of friends due to this disease. And it doesn't have to be like that at all. I mean, this is the place that I can come to, that I can get the help that I need, that I can have the friendships today that I didn't have back then. People truly care about me in this program. They want to see people succeed in this program. We're all here to help each other out, and that's the beautiful thing about AA and about this program. Because if it wasn't for AA, I mean, I don't even want to think about how my life would be, as far as that goes. But I really, really, really want to thank y'all for letting me tell my story, and I'm truly grateful for all y'all. Thank you.
Thank you.